evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. I'm Hannah. I'm the assistant director here at the library, and I just wanted to say welcome. We're very excited to have Nat Barrows here tonight. You may know Nat is the owner of Penobscot Bay Press, and he's here to speak about his new book, Through My Eyes, about his 50 years working in Maine community journalism. Nat was just recently named to the MPA Hall of Fame, so that was a very exciting honor for him, I'm sure, and for our community. And he's just a great force in the community, so we wanted to give him an opportunity to share a little bit about his book with all of us. And hopefully there's some people on the internet watching, and maybe some radio listeners going to tune in later. So we'll have a wide platform here.
Great.
Thanks for coming.
Yes. Thank you and welcome, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here at the library. Libraries are an important part of communities, just like newspapers are, sharing information through the printed word and other ways. Tonight I'll have a mix of a little bit of talking, some reading, and taking questions. I've got a book with about a little over 300 pages in it of columns, and so I'll read for some of those columns and give you a little bit of background on myself and the weekly newspapers and pick out a few columns to kind of illustrate all that. So don't hesitate to ask questions when I'm finished. You'll be welcome. Simply, I want to take you back to September of 1968. And in September of 1968, I arrived in Stonington, Maine, and started working, took over the weekly newspaper, The Island Advantages, and started putting out my first edition that last week of September. And on October 3rd, the first edition of the newspaper under my editorship and publishership and ownership hit the streets. And that was a seminal moment for me for lots of different reasons. And I will tell you a little bit about my background. I was a sports editor for my high school paper, worked on the college paper as a reporter, worked as a copy boy on the daily newspaper in the city where I went to college, and was a child of the, well, I came of age in the 60s, and so I wanted to make a difference. I was looking around to see what opportunities there would be after I'd graduated, and a neighbor brought over a copy of Down East magazine that had real estate ads in it, and I'd summered at my family home in southern Maine, Gorham, for the early part of my life till the home was unfortunately sold because the family couldn't afford to keep it, people had died and so forth. And anyway, the neighbor brought over a copy of the Down East magazine, thinking I could maybe find some real estate that I'm going to be back to the earth and look after myself and so on and so forth. But it was too expensive. But there was a little small ad in the back on the classifieds right here, which said, "Want to live in Maine? Like to run a small town weekly. Editor plans to retire soon. Write Penobscot Bay Press, Stonington, Maine." So I answered the ad and showed up and negotiated a very reasonable deal and jumped into the paper, and it was me. And there was a retired person that was helping print the paper for the owner and two women who worked at the soda fountain of the drugstore in front of the little annex where the newspaper was published in a room about a quarter of this size, maybe. And they folded and unfolded the papers in single sheet of paper, and I printed one side at a time, another side. They unfolded and refolded, and I printed the other two pages. And that's how I started. So my first edition, I wrote an editorial, which was, the column was called On the Side. And that kind of morphed, this approach kind of morphed into the Through My Eyes column somewhat later. So I will start out with a reading, and the reading is dated October 3rd, 1968, and the head of the column is, "The die is cast. So said Caesar to his legions as he crossed the river Rubicon to embark on his course of conflict and eventual leadership in the Roman world. The symbolism is appropriate because the Rubicon marked the point of no return for Caesar. He could have stayed safe and out of the struggle by not crossing the boundary the river signified. But once he crossed it, he was committed. So, as I crossed the bridge over Egemagen Reach to assume editorship of this paper, I had this Caesar-like reflection, without any dreams of empire, about my commitment here. In a time when most young people are getting sucked into a senseless war or joining the ranks of faceless commuters living in faceless suburbs and working for nameless corporations, I felt the die was truly cast as I, the individual, took on the responsibilities of the island newspaper and faced the challenge of making real friends and a name for myself in a totally strange community. To me, there's a great elation and stimulation about involving oneself in a personal face-to-face, mind-to-mind occupation like that of the editorship of this paper. And what a place to work in. The many-faceted beauty of the island and its coastline that people in teeming ghettos and superficial suburbs cannot imagine existing are like elixirs to the soul. The enduring, important qualities are in the air here, waiting to be inhaled and felt. They come into your body, ridding it of the prejudice, narrow-mindedness, stupidity, and smallness that only exists in places that man has built for himself, to let them nurture and overcome him. But, very importantly, I have the fine tradition and reputation of that Gordon and Helen, and recently Helen McKay, have imparted to this paper. Be assured that the sincere, honest, and forthright reputation that the McKays have built into the advantages will continue doing my editorship. When a family newspaper changes hands, there are bound to be some changes. But this is your paper, so the changes will be at your suggestion and criticism. With this in mind, please refer to the Reader's Choice box on the back page. I had a little survey in that for readers to let me know about what their some of their priorities are. So the concepts of this column that evolved, because it came from my unique position as an editor and publisher of a community newspaper, and it's about circles. It's about circles of connectivity in communities that the editor and the publisher as a reporter and a small business person are involved in and create. And a newspaper is a unique institution in the community because those circles, and I'm going to talk a lot about circles tonight, the newspaper can cover lots of different things in the community. It covers social circles, economic circles, geographical, demographical, institutional, and personal. It cuts across all these layers of the community. So as I circulated through these layers over the months, this concept of my experiences through my eyes, what I was seeing, what I was experiencing, this journey, and I kind of evolved this to share with people my encounters and my experiences. And the goal is to, through this communication of what came through my eyes and the experiential journey I took and was taking and would continue to take, to enrich lives of the readers, build community, and have fun. So the concept here is that each of the three papers is based in one of the core towns, and Castine, Blue Hill, and Stonington are where the three papers, and that's a circle because they're all contiguous and they connect again. So the circle features into what I'm about to talk about here, because in a newspaper there are three interconnected circles of importance to the functionality and success of the newspaper: staff, advertisers, and readers. Staff is the key. A newspaper can't operate on a sustainable or successful basis without a committed, dedicated, professional, caring, and passionate and compassionate staff. Without businesses that are willing to advertise and provide ancillary support, and readers, the ultimate, who will subscribe and buy the newspapers on the newsstands, over the past 5 decades, and I celebrated my 50th anniversary, as you can tell from the October date, in early October. Over the past 5 decades, I've been fortunate to have these circles connect. Readers, we have loyal subscribers who have been with us through 2 and 3 generations. I bet some of the people here have background like that. And these subscribers come from over 40 states. And we have a weekly cycle of printing every Thursday at the press at the Ellsworth American. And we have a delivery that zigzags down through this part of the county and down to the island and over to Castine. And it's on a pretty regular schedule. People know this schedule, and every Thursday in some of the stores, in fact, almost many of them, there are people waiting for the arrival of our delivery truck to buy the paper, which is very reassuring. advertisers and supportive institutions. Advertising constitutes 70-75% of a typical small newspaper's revenue stream. We've had 4 advertisers from the first issue 50 years ago that the businesses, through different generations and owners, are still advertising. And that's that word, commitment. And it's very special. And at times, we haven't had advertisers advertising for whatever reason, and we've actually had loyal readers go to them and said, "Are you out of business? What's going on? Why aren't you advertising?" Ah. Supportive institutions. The printer we've had for almost, well, from 45 odd years, the Ellsworth American has been very supportive about helping us with our technical issues, being committed to a schedule, and being understanding with us when our cash flow is lean. And we have, for over 28 years, had Bar Harbor Bank as our banker, who've helped us thrive by providing us financing for expansion and growth, and then survival support during lean times. And I'm going to have a story about Bar Harbor Bank in a little later in my presentation tonight. But back to the staff. The staff is really the key element in the circle, and it starts and ends all this interconnectivity. Working on a community newspaper is a job, yeah, but in essence, it's a calling. Through our news and information products, we make a difference. What the staff does and does not do determines the success of the business and in the functioning and success of the communities we serve. Over the years, I've had people cycling through the company. Each of them have contributed facets of their skills and passion and abilities to the continuing circling of the institution. I'm proud to note that our current staff of 15 people, full and part-timers, has a total of over 213 years of being employed in the newspaper, and you add all their years up. And we have support people. Our columnist, food columnist, Harry Kazarian, has been with the papers over 30 years. Our historical columnist at the Advantages continued her husband's column, which has now been running for more than 40 years. He died some years ago and was a photographer and a columnist. Also running for over 40 years is a sports column written by the son of the man who started writing it originally, in the Advantages, to Harry and then now Jack Scott. At the Packet's 50th anniversary party in 2010, we honored Gail Dernbaugh, the wife and co-founder of the Packet, and Betty Britt, a reporter, paste-up person, news editor, both of whom were still working at that time and been with the paper since its founding 50 years ago. So that's really, that to me is very special. So it's also about me as the owner and publisher and editor, and it's about my approach to my job and my commitments and the communities. And it's about circles again. It's about inner and outer circles that exist inside me and outside in the larger world of harmony, peace, and love, that connection of those three facets. Now, we all have, well, we try and have anywhere, at least I try and have, an internal compass that helps me find and determine who I am by my pointing to my priorities of self-knowledge, including harmony and peace and love, and constantly thinking about those things and how those things interplay with my job and my commitments to the readers and the staff and the advertisers. And it's about outer harmony, too. And the word harmony is important because that implies circles also. And this is part of the reason I'm talking about this as the background and how I get to some of these columns. Harmony with the natural and human worlds we inhabit is very important. And we need to know ourselves to be able to function in that, but we also need to be open and receptive to those worlds. And finding peace from this journey, because it's a journey every day, every time we take a breath, and every time I write an editorial or write a story or take a picture, is finding that peace and harmony in connection with the world around. And that through my eyes is the expression of some of that journey, the columns I write. So I'm going to read you from some of my columns and start with one that will be familiar with you. We're talking about harmony and peace and love. Okay, living in love, June 29th, 2017. Our world is awash with love. Religions preach it, pundits laud it, workshops instruct how to find it. All forms of art extol it. Dictionaries and digital searches provide multiple and varying definitions of it. We tell our spouses, partners, family members that we love them. Some of us are lucky enough to receive the gift of unconditional love. Others come to find love for themselves. Still others never understand or find it at all. Love is a journey, not a destination. As each of us undertake this journey, let us do so with peace, harmony, and acceptance. This column is inspired by the words on a banner on the side of the building in Blue Hill that houses MAE, right down here on Main Street. It says, "Wherever you are and whatever you do, be in love." So, I want to talk a little bit now about people, the natural world, and the community, part of this circle. And the first one I'm going to read is about people. And one of the things that is important when writing about people is, what I'm going to start with here on this first column is positive energy. And the column is entitled Positive Energy Person, from July 2nd, 2009. The community said goodbye to Bob Bannister this past Sunday, June 27th. We have written before about the impact that positive energy people have in our communities. So we must not let Bob's passing go by without acknowledging his years of being one of Blue Hill's archetypal positive energy people. In his business, professional, and personal life, he was constantly brimming with this unique brand of positive energy that connected with all the people and organizations he interacted with. His enthusiasm for life and community has left us all with a richer, more functional, and just plain fun legacy. Okay, dated January 20th, 2011, this column is entitled MM equals PE plus E. No, this is not a column about some math formula. The headline is a simple summation of the long and special life of an islander who died this past week. In her extraordinary 104 years, Mary McGuire changed the people she came into contact with her constant positive energy and engagement. She had the unique ability to project her inner positive energy to people around her through her individual engagement. And that word engagement is important, and I've used it twice already, and just digressing a second, and that's what community journalism is all about. It's about engagement. But back to Mary. For me, interactions with her always produce feelings of admiration and awe. As a person who values highly the importance of having and projecting positive energy, I always found Mary to be the consummate practitioner of this. She had always had something focused, intelligent, and informed to say about things happening to or people doing good things on the island. Articles that appeared in this paper recently or months ago would be mentioned in a completeness and clarity of detail with praise and sometimes requests for updates. Many islanders could share similar stories about her. She was a true citizen of the island in spirit, whether she was physically here or not during her long life. Indeed, she lived her life as a role model for all of us. Now, switching here a bit. 32. This column is entitled Losing Uniqueness, May 2nd, 1991. Last summer, by the phone booth next to our Stonington office, I had a short encounter that revealed a slice of life in our unique slow lane. Walking by the phone booths, I noticed two men in high-priced resort clothes, their faces florid with consternation as they talked to each other. They were talking about their inability to call through to their automatic phone answering machines from the pay phones. They accosted me to help them. Explaining they were off a boat and wished to reach their answering machines, they asked me why they couldn't do it. Was this not a touch-tone phone, they questioned. No, I replied. We don't have touch-tone service on the island. They spoke with animation about the urgent need for both of them to get in touch with their answering machines. They had to do it now. Finally, they asked where the closest touchtone phone was located. I told them Ellsworth. Where's that? They asked. Oh, about 40 miles up the road, I said. Their faces fell. They knew they were not going to get through that day to their machines. As I sat at my desk after the encounter, I smiled a small smile, thinking how nice it is to be out of touch sometimes. But out of touch, well, being out of touch allows for personal time, freedom, contemplation, and a pace of life sometimes set by oneself, not others. I wondered if these two men could appreciate this, or had they spent the rest of the day on their boat fretting. Now, with these new touchtone phone systems in place, such an encounter can never again take place here. Now, moving on to nature. And nature has been a major subject of my columns over the decades, because I feel personally that I am grounded, talking about my inner journey, and humans need to be grounded in nature because we all are part of this natural world of ours, and we construct things, as I said earlier, that separate us from nature. So I have a few columns on nature, and these are some of them are pretty short. Let's see what one you want to start with here. Yeah, I think I'll do this one right here. This is a bit longer, so yeah, I'll read this one here. Storybook Happening, June 13th, 1991. Children's books often have fanciful tales involving real or imagined animals having improbable adventures with children, which always have happy endings for the good characters. Bad characters often fade away. I've read many such books to my children with great pleasure over the years. As we all know, when we get to a certain age, life does not have uniformly happy endings in its various stories. Bad characters do not always fade away, but kids don't need to know this. It is better if they don't, because part of youth is optimism. We adults need such stories, too. All this is leading up to an adventure I had on a morning in May, which could come right out of one of these storybooks. It actually did happen. It was one of those May mornings we had so many of this year when the sun came up to bring summer warmth and freshness. Such mornings beguile one to take a walk before work or sit outside for a few minutes with the second cup of coffee. The latter is exactly what my wife and I were doing. We were sitting on a little bench in front of the bunny hutch, momentarily without attending children as they were inside getting ready for school. We were calmly sipping our coffee when, in a flash, the adventure began. Flying in front of our house, desperately darting this way and that, came a junco chased by a small hawk. Fleeing for its life, the small bird was doing everything it could to elude the hawk. Nearby, in a patch of sun next to our car, sat one of our cats, also enjoying this morning ambiance and our company. As the bird flew in desperation away from the hawk, it darted right into the cat's mouth. Thwarted, the hawk flew away. Surprised, to say the least, the cat scurried off into the nearby shed. Agog, my wife and I sat there for a moment. Then we went to check on the cat and the bird. My wife went back into the shed while I went through the front. I was able to grab the cat as she tried to get away, and as I grabbed her, she opened her mouth. The bird flew away. The cat gave me a reproachful look and walked off. We went back to our bench and coffee. We had a real story to tell the children that morning. This next one combines a little bit about the positive energy and nature. And it's entitled, Those Splashes of Yellow, dated May 9, 2013. Driving around during the recent batch of sunny, clear weather, I've enjoyed seeing the splashes of yellow spring color from the full-blooming forsythia bushes that punctuate our local landscapes. These bursting yellow blooms are saying, yes, look at us. We are proclaiming the actual arrival of the spring growing season. Let us celebrate together. It is a feel-good, reassuring, reinforcing visage. Sometimes we know something emotionally before we know it intellectually. Recently, I read about interpretation of colors. Yellow is energy, cheerful, open, warm, joy, happiness, and intellect. So, now the journalist in me knows why the forsythia gives me such a lift. Okay, this is about community now. And this is Random Acts of Friendliness, dated July 23rd, 2015. It is the height of the summer visitor and tourist season. Our rentals and inns are filled with people here to share our places and communities with us. Whenever those of us who live and work here year-round venture out, we encounter them. As we do so, let us remember the times we have been visitors and tourists ourselves. Some of my fond memories of being a visitor or tourist in a different place are the random and real personal connections that have happened. Through random acts of kindness and connection, people have taken the time and interest to converse with me. From such sharing experiences, I've often been given insights into the lives and uniqueness of where I happen to be. My visit has been enhanced and made personally real. We have all had such experiences. So, my thought for this column is, while remembering those random acts of friendliness and connectivity we all have received, be the giver of such acts to visitors and tourists we encounter this summer. Positive giving and receiving are a circle for happiness. Oops, some of my tools of my trade just fell on the floor here. Okay, this is a column, very short column, entitled, Isn't It Nice? April 28th, 1978. This coming Monday, a new law will take effect in Maine. It will allow motorists, after stopping, to make a right turn on red lights. This is an excellent idea to speed up the flow of traffic, which has been successfully implemented in other states. But from where we sit in this newspaper office in Stonington, it is 40 miles to the nearest light. Isn't it nice? And finally, a story that I promised earlier. And this is entitled, Another Errant Vehicle, written November 21st, 2012. A letter to the editor this week describes the journey of a possible errant vehicle. Let me tell you my errant vehicle story. It is a summer day many years ago. I parked my van, and this van was the family van that we'd had a lot of miles on, facing south on Main Street, Route 15, across the street from the Blue Hill office, right near the steps by the town office that lead up to the town office. A busy morning, I'm immersed in details, deadlines, decisions, and phone calls. A call requires that I use the van to make an immediate trip. Grabbing my paperwork, I head it to the front door to go outside. I look across the street from my van. It is not there. Confused, I try to put aside the encumbrances of all the morning busyness to remember where I parked. I'm sure it was across the street. I step out, look more closely. It's not there. Maybe my memory is faulty. Perhaps I parked further south, up the hill, on Main Street. Oh, I look up the hill. No, it's not there. I look north. Ah, there, slowly rolling backwards down Main Street, is the van. For a change, there are no vehicles parked along the other side of the street, nor there is any traffic. As I watch, the van slowly crosses the street, drifting down towards the Bar Harbor Bank building. I run down the sidewalk to watch it come to rest against the bank's front railing, knocking down a post on the stoop in the process. I arrive at the bank the same time the manager and several tellers burst out the front door to see what has happened. It is not too many years before this incident that the bank had been robbed. But any concerns the staff may have had are allayed after we talk for a few minutes. We all have a chuckle. I drive the van away, saying I would be back to fix the damage. Returning with a hammer and some nails, I did just that. And as an aside, I'll finish the story first. What happened? Well, the old van's transmission had been acting up and finally let go that morning, releasing it from the park position. As I do not normally use the emergency brake, the van was free to, shall we say, roam. Thinking how much worse it could have been, I still laugh as I write and now read this column. I use the emergency brake on that vehicle after that. So in closing, I want to read you one more short column. This was written a little over a year ago, December 22nd, 2017. Embracing joy. This is the time of year for joy. This strong emotion can be sourced and found all around us. Christians find joy in the birth of their Savior. Looking at the children's drawings and words in this issue of your community newspaper, you will find numerous expressions of joy. Our Christmas cards and songs are full of joy, with the all-embracing "Joy to the World" refrain. We behold joy on the faces of loved ones as they open cards and gifts. Our traditions of displays and decorations bring joy. Joy begets joy. As we experience joy from its presence in the world around us, we become joyful inside ourselves. So let's have some fun with a small exercise. Here is a list of words that help define the emotion of joy. Great delight, keen pleasure, happiness, rapture, bliss. Over this season, have a joyful aha moment. Then pick one of these words to describe your emotion at that moment. Say it to yourself. If circumstances are appropriate, share it with another. So as we end this year, thank you for reading, and may joy be with you. May joy be with you, and thank you for listening to my readings and talk this evening. And I will welcome questions, and I have some books in the back for sale if you're interested in buying books. Question, yes.
I don't know if this is outside the topic of the book, but I'm curious on a business, from a business standpoint, when you grew from just, I don't know how it went down in Stonington.
Yeah.
Obviously it went pretty well, but now you own 3 newspapers on the peninsula. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, I found that in the beginning, it was a letterpress operation, and I was hand-setting type, and the composing room was up in Brewer. I would mail copy up. They would linotype it and ship it down on the lead on an express truck, and it was very cumbersome and tiresome. So I was spending a lot of time manufacturing. I did get some help. But I went offset printing, and I went to a printer over in Belfast for several years, then went to the American. And I realized that the small scale of my operation would never generate enough resources to provide the quality products that I really wanted to provide, because the overhead was being apportioned out to a very small income base. So the answer to that was to expand. And so I purchased the Packet in 1981, and then 9 years later purchased the Patriot, and did a lot of synergizing and combining to reduce the overhead and enable more resources to be put into staff and the product. So that was the concept behind that.
It seems to have worked.
Yeah. Well, at times it's worked, and other times it's not worked so well. But small business is always a struggle, and that's part of the ticket you get punched when you jump in.
Process, putting out these columns week after week. Do you write them out longhand? Do you have a special place where you like to sit? What's it like?
Well, the creative, we all have ways that we work in a creative process. In mine, it's like I plant seeds and they sit there sometimes, and then an experience will water that seed. And that will come forward, and I'll write about it. I don't write longhand. I take notes sometimes during the experiences, because notes, and it's been difficult as a journalist, because I have learned not to trust my memory, because it can be faulty. So I take notes, and the notes are memory keys that will open things up so that doors don't get closed, because that's how people make mistakes in reporting, is they don't get things accurately. And I will do longhand writing for quotes and things. But for columns like these, I would sometimes go back to the office and take notes, or I would, at home or something, I would write little memory keys down on a piece of paper or in a notebook. And when I came to sit down and write, I learned the hard way the necessity of creating a bubble. when I sit down at a typewriter and now a keyboard, that I have to have a bubble around me so that the outside world is gone and I am totally in a world of my head and the writing. And I have notes that I read, and I'm going back and forth with my notes, and I'm thinking about priorities, what's important, how does the sequence go, how does the flow go, what words can be used and not words, and it just kind of flows. I write it, and now I spell check it, and I put it aside. And I go do something else, and that might be for half an hour, it might be for a day, depending on the deadlines and what's going on in my life. Then I will come back to it and reread it with a fresh face, fresh view. And often I'll change some adjectives, delete, add some things. I'll review my notes again, go back and forth to my notes. This is partly the way I write stories, too, but stories are written on deadline. That's a little bit different. But these are often written on deadlines, too. So it's about the excitement of communicating, of creating a communicating a vessel, a column, or a story, or a photo when you pose it. And I want to be as clear and succinct and focused as possible in what I create, because it's about you folks, the readers. That's what this is all about. And it's got to touch you somehow. It's got to reach you somehow. It's got to connect. And about this connect, this circle again, we're talking about between the writer and the reader. Question.
50 years ago, no internet.
Right.
Now, internet's ubiquitous.
Yep.
How has that change impacted Penobscot Bay Press?
On the creating side, it makes research much easier. When you're trying to get some facts on something or get some background on something that you need for a phrase or a sentence in your story about something, it's enabled us to do some very different and interesting things electronically. We have two webcams, one above my desk in the Stonington office and one in the window of the Packet office here. And those webcams have tens of thousands of people coming on and off them a month from all over the world. We can track those things, and it's amazing. People, especially in Stonington, in the parking lot there, will get time to connect with people and hold up a sign and say, hello in Ohio or something, and all these little people will be gathered around, and people will... but when there wasn't phones in Isle of Ho, some people in Isle of Ho held up a sign and said, I'm on the next boat, dear, or something like that. Because they couldn't connect otherwise. So it's about connecting, and that's part of it. And we do have a website, and we put a bunch of our stuff up on the web, and it's a tool for enhancing and doing things that we can't do with a printed product. Because there are limitations. It's a fixed thing, and all the apps and the mobile things, and it's competition to some degree, but it is and it isn't. It's competition for advertising a little bit, but for readers, the in-depth stories that come in the paper and the few that we do put on the web are what attracts our customers. So it's impacted us in both positive and neutral and negative ways, right across the spectrum. And the challenge is to understand the medium and not get totally seduced by it and use it and make it work for the communication circle. And some of the downsides of the digital world are, one of the large downsides is email and the amount of email traffic that we get individually as or me as editor and publisher and my various capacities and our reporters get and we get from the community, it's overwhelming. It's too easy to communicate in some ways. And so a lot of the communication is like, ugh. And it's a challenge to filter through that and not get buried by email. And responding to email is very... it can be very time-consuming. And people, our world, we used to joke about Maine being the slow lane, living in the slow lane. Well, the internet, it's not the slow lane when no matter where you live. You can be far away somewhere, and if you have an internet connection, you're not in the slow lane. You're in the lane with everybody else that wants something, boom, very quickly. So it's speeded up the pace of the news cycle to some degree, too. We put breaking news up on the website or on our social media platform because people want to know. But also, it's degraded the news product to some degree because people don't want to, especially the younger generation, the people that are digital natives, and for those of us like me who is not a digital native and still know, can remember very clearly using typewriters, it's a challenge to stay with it and figure it all out. And it keeps one on one's toes. Yes?
How do you see, say, 10 or 15 years from now? Oh, I know boy. So many newspapers are going digital and reducing the mm-hmm. print copy. How do you see, what do you see the future of Penobscot Bay Press? Do you think at some point it'll be only digital, or do you think you'll always have print copy?
Well, there's different, the national and regional newspapers are struggling really hard with that. The community newspapers are struggling, but not quite so hard, because the digital advertising, the national digital advertising that has gone over to the web and digital products, the local plumber and restaurant is not going to, we'll have a website maybe, but it's not going to be doing advertising so much on the web, because people look at it, but they don't. Locally, they do to some degree, but they don't. There's these reviews and things and stuff and everything. So I think it's hard to tell. Things are happening so fast. It's hard to look ahead, because I like to read science fiction, and science fiction takes things and takes trends and moves them out. And 18 years ago, at the turn of the century, we had started our website. We started a website just shortly after that. And I don't think I could have foreseen where I'm standing here in 2018 talking about what's happened. But things go in cycles. And I think there's always going to be a demand for the print product. But I think we have to evolve and adapt our business model to the digital products. And that's not simple. It's not easy, because there's not a lot of advertising in the small market digital products, because the advertising, as I said, is 75%, so we're 75%. So we have to look at different models and how to generate revenue. And the challenge too, it's not just the digital challenge, it's the delivery challenge. Delivering products digitally is wonderful. You get huge quality, immediacy, you can play around with the images, you can do lots of, you can do videos, lots of really interesting things. But we're struggling with the print product because of the postal service. There's a designation in the postal service called second class, and periodical publications are eligible for second class rates, which are cheaper than third class, cheaper than first class, but more expensive than third class. And third class is the flyers and the junk mail and stuff that doesn't have a time value on it, so it just kind of sits there. Well, unfortunately, in my 50 years, the service of the post office, second-class mail, periodicals, magazines, newspapers, are treated like junk mail now. They don't get very good service. And people who live away, and we have, as I said, subscribers in 40 states, and 1 week we mail the papers out from the post office in Blue Hill every Thursday afternoon, boom, they get into the system, with the exception of a few things like Thanksgiving week or something like that. And let's say somebody's in Maryland, and I had a cousin living in Maryland who used to get the paper, so I'd get these stories. Some weeks the paper would come Monday, sometimes even Saturday, and then sometimes the paper wouldn't come for a week, and then two papers would come in the same day. And sometimes the papers wouldn't come at all, ever. They would vanish. And the rising costs and the declining service of the mail are making it complicated to consistently deliver a print product outside basically the state of Maine. And it's very frustrating because we pay, our postal expense is the third biggest expense. The biggest is payroll, the second is printing, and the third is postage. Our second class bill is the post office. It's discouraging. So we're thinking about alternative products and delivery methods, but change is difficult and expensive, and we're a pretty tight ship, and finding staff time and resources to affect change is hard. So it's a lot of challenges. But one of the things that I'm passionate about and has kept me going all these decades, still on my feet, is that we have 51 times a year to do better. We don't publish Christmas week. And that's an ongoing stimulus and a challenge. And it can be hard sometimes, but it can be really thrilling and exciting when the paper comes out and you go, ah, you have those aha moments, and look at the great picture of this kid doing her crafts, and look at this, the publisher, oh, look at that nice color ad. Yeah, some other questions? Yes.
In compiling your book, you have the opportunity to look over the span of your life of 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn about yourself during that process? And what did you learn about our world during that process?
That's a good question. What I learned was I've been consistent. A lot of my priorities and concerns and things I considered important have certainly grown and expanded, but many of those core values that I had coming here and that first column I wrote are still there. They've been enhanced and expanded, but that was really... It was kind of enlightening for me. You don't think about yourself over a span of 50 years very often, but I went back and went through all my columns to pick these out for the book, and some I didn't pick, and I went, there were a few I went, oh my God, why did I write that? Whoa! That didn't make it into the book, those columns. But I said, boy, that was pretty good. Jeez, So I learned about myself that I had a lot of fun writing these columns. I had a lot of fun. And it was fun to go back and see those. What I was finding excited about, and I still do, and my learning and how some of the craft of my writing has improved over the years. And writing is one of those things that sometimes you nail it and sometimes you just don't. The world, I alluded to it a little bit, of how slow it was. And my composing room was 55 miles away from the press, the little letter press that I printed the first papers on. And that seemed to be okay. People's expectations were, oh, we'll pick up the paper on Thursday and I'll have all the news in it. Now people expect with a click of a mouse that, boom, all the news is going to be right there. So the expectations of the readers are quite different. And that is a big change. That's a big change. The immediacy, our challenge is people no longer read our papers to get the headlines. They already know the headlines. Too hurt in car crash, school board drops the basketball program, or whatever. That would be quite a stunning headline if that happened. But they look to us for different things. They look to us for the nuances, the background, and what people look for in news is, does it affect me, the news? Does it affect my family or my friends or my loved ones? Is it about some place I know about or care about? And it's a personal relationship that a news product has with its readers. And we still maintain that through our different ways that we communicate with them. So, I don't know, does that answer the question reasonably fully? Or? Yes.
When you first arrived in Stonington and took on the newspaper, what was the reaction of people to you?
Oh, boy. Well, I've got a little story on that. In fact, I can tell the story. It was different because I was 22, and I had a mustache, and I had hair on my head, and sometimes I had a beard, and
I remember I met you then.
Yeah. It was a challenge, and some people, Mainers take their time in making judgments. Some Mainers do. The traditional Maine culture is you don't judge until you have information and experience about something or some individual. But some people just took a look at me and that was it. So I had to prove myself through what I was doing. But I got pushback. Let's see. How can I tell you this story? There's two little stories here. And when people aren't used to having reports written about them, people in power don't like to have negative things said about them, even if those negative things are quotes from what they said. So I have a little story, and I brought along a helper to help me with the story. And the helper is Little Nat. And this is Little Nat right here. And there's a story about Little Nat. So here we go. He has a story, and let me tell you it. After I had written a number of articles that the Stonington selectmen had not been pleased with, I started noticing, this was in the 70s, early 70s. I've been there not too long, long enough to make a mark, but not long enough to know quite how things worked. Stonington selectmen had not been pleased with these articles. I started noticing that the town policeman kept appearing in my vicinity all the time. He was always around, not knowing or paying attention to the requirement for annual inspections of my vehicle. The cop caught me for an inspired inspection ticket. It was expired. I let it go because I'd moved from an out-of-state and didn't know the cycle and so on. I paid the fine and moved on. A year or so later, after the initial brouhaha had blown over, one of the selectmen, former selectmen, brought me Little Nat. She had made it to make up for their initial reaction to my work and for fun. I thought, oh, that's very nice. That's great. Thank you. This woman has since passed, so I leave her unidentified still. A decade or so passes. On a visit back to town, after having left the job for many years previously, the cop from that time stopped in for a visit. With a grin, he told me that the selectman had instructed him to catch me doing something to give me a, quote, lesson because of my unfavorable but truthful coverage. Lesson learned. Those in power will retaliate when their power and performance are threatened. I paid a fine, but many of my colleagues in this country and around the world pay with their lives. So, but I also had an epiphany. There are several epiphanies. The excitement, I'll never forget walking down Main Street in Stonington after printing that first issue, and I had the subscriber copies wrapped in butcher paper and a box on my shoulder. And a little bit earlier, I'd stopped in town and dropped off the newsagent copies at a little store across from what's now not there any longer, hasn't been there for a long time, across from the town office. As I was coming back from the post office, Actually, the store is down the street a little bit, to be totally accurate. I was walking back, and I looked across the street, and there, stepping out of the store, was a person holding that first paper I had printed and just dropped off, reading it. All of a sudden, circle. I've been laboring, figuring out this press, getting help, trying to write the stories, just blah, 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 blah. But all of a sudden, the whole thing became totally clear. That was the connection. There was the reader. That was it. That's what I was there for. And so there's there were different reactions. And I did a story on long hair regulations at a local, the Deer Isle High School. And it created a huge brouhaha because long hair was an issue in those days with various people. And the people didn't like the coverage. And I thought, over the years, I've been threatened and had trying to have people lead advertising boycotts against me. I threatened to have my house burned down, threatened to have my kids retaliated against. And that goes with the territory, unfortunately. But the situation created such a brouhaha that the Boston Globe sent up a reporting team and did a story on it. Yeah. So that was different.
That was on the long hair.
Yeah. Long hair in the high school, the regulations and stuff and everything. So this job of mine has been interesting. There have been a lot of different things that have happened over the years. A lot of good things. A lot of fun things. Well, thank you all for coming. It's been a pleasure to have you, and I wish you a happy holiday season and Merry Christmas, and keep reading the newspapers, all of them. Thank you.